welcome once again, friends, to a special edition of Swing Thoughts. Even though we probably won't release this, I promise this week I will make sure it's out Saturday morning. But we'll probably put this out around the middle of the week, but we're recording it the day after a major, which is our new thing. After majors, when we can, when it's convenient. Coach Tim and myself.
We feel like it.
That's right. There's no hard and fast rules, okay? What do you want from us? You get this show for free. We'll tell you when we're going to do it. I'm Golf Spiritual Leader. That, of course, is author, raconteur, and broadcaster, Timothy O'Connor.
Good morning.
Yeah, man.
I got my morning voice going. Because
yeah, you
morning.
Do. You got the heavy pipes happening. It's cool. This program is brought to you by the fine folks at TaylorMade Golf. Let's talk a little bit, if we can, off the beginning of this program. Let me just get rid of the theme song. And let's hear from TaylorMade about custom fitting. Why don't we? Hello.
Get fit with TaylorMade Golf's ultimate custom club fitting experience. The TaylorMade Performance Lab in Woodbridge unites golfers with a personalized fitting session and TaylorMade equipment to optimize your game. Highly trained master fitters take an in-depth look at the golf swing utilizing industry-leading technology. Book your fitting experience now to cover all your custom needs from driver to putter. Free gift with booking. Get fit. Optimize your game at the TaylorMade Performance Lab. Visit TaylorMadeFitting.ca.
So there you have it. That's one of our big sponsors, the title sponsor of this program, TaylorMade Golf Canada. Of course, a few other people help support us, Tim.
Yeah, I'm going to be wandering out to the golf course wearing my Oscar Bravo polo today. I'm going to do some work with my son, Sean, and I'll be resplendent. And I think I'm going to go with the blue today with the polka dot collar.
I like that.
And it's worth mentioning because the details of these shirts are just amazing. And you should check them out at whoisoscarbravo.com.
I'm actually wearing an Oscar Bravo t-shirt.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, it's cool. Here's the thing about this t-shirt. I'm always a little nervous wearing it because it ain't cheap. So,
and you ain't good with things like
no,
mustard.
Exactly. My daughter came here yesterday afternoon to drop her dog off. I'm babysitting my grand puppy for the week while she's off somewhere at a friend's wedding. And she said, "Daddy, you've got stains on your shirt." I said, "I know. I put it on like that. Like it was already pre-stained." I did. I said this. Because at first she thought I went to hug her. She goes, "Oh, don't hug me. Is that fresh?" I go, "No, that's yesterday's. I'm wearing day old stained shirts now, but I'm wearing the Oscar Bravo T-shirt, and of course also sponsored by an amazing Mexicana Adventura in the Mayan Riviera. It's if you're looking for something amazing and unusual to do with your golf group, including your spouses and partners, check out secretlink.golf for a one-of-a-kind, unique, I think one-of-a-kind means unique, golf experience.
Yeah, especially
experience.
With spouses and partners, plural.
Oh, yeah. All right, so here it is, the big show, and I have great news for everyone. I finally have seen a copy of Getting Unstuck, 7 Transformational Practices for Golf Nerds. You know I've got it in front of me because that's the first time ever I've gotten the name right. Also known as How to Change Your Self-Defeating Behaviors and Move Your Game Forward. Look at you, all grown up. This is going to be like a real book, like you'll be able to hold it and put it on your coffee table and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you can sink back in your couch and turn pages and just like olden days.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure there'll be a digital copy available for folks.
Yep. I'm thinking I might even do an audio version. Like, why not? People are listening, downloading their information in all kinds of different formats. So why not try to accommodate all the different ways people take their information in?
I think that's cool. I did, I have some friends in the radio business. And,
yeah, I imagine a few.
And a few of my friends are big voiceover guys. And one in particular is Dan Duran. In fact, my other good friend, best friend, is his name is Jeff Lumbee, but he's got a commercial that ran a bunch on the golf this past weekend for Gibson's Scotch or Gibson's whiskey.
Oh yeah.
So next time you see that, that's my pal Lumbee. Anyway, but the point is, a few friends of mine have done audiobooks. I've only done one of them. I did an audiobook years ago.
Oh really?
For a company called Alan Carr's Easy Way to Quit Smoking, Stop Smoking.
Really? You did that?
I did the audio for that, and I'm going to tell you something. I've done some voiceovers in my time as my voice gets lower and more professional, and it's one of the hardest things I've ever done. It really is. It's this. The book was a similar size to you, probably max 130-ish pages, maybe 140, but so not a big book. But man, it took, it was like 3 or 4 days, hard days of recording it.
Now, because you are in a studio, could you do it at home or did you have to go someplace?
This was years before, this is like 10 years ago. So before COVID, I went to a studio and read it for days and days and days.
The thing that I was thinking about in listening to audiobooks, because I listen to a lot of them, is are you constantly pressing, you know, pause or stop or something when you, you know, flub a word and redoing it? I mean, you must be doing that all the time.
Well, yes. The answer is yes. The thing is, you know, after the years I've been doing this, most people that do audiobooks are pretty good at cold reading. So what
really,
they do,
you haven't read the book first. You go,
well, no, you know what I meant. How do I describe this? So when you do a 30, I want to get off this quickly, but when you do a 30 second spot, you know, it's, you might only have 22 seconds worth of copy, right, and you can go over it and over it. But when you're doing a book, when I say cold, like, you know, you can sort of familiarize yourself, but you have to start on page one, chapter one, and start reading. And so what they do is they let you go for as long as you can before you make a mistake. So I'm pretty good at that. So you might get 3/4 of a page before you screw up. And or they might go in and punch in for a word you flubbed, but everything else was fine. But, you know, it's a lot of reading. And I would imagine if you've written the book like you have, it might be a tad easier because you already know your intention and you've read those words thousands of times.
Yeah, I generally like listening to books that are narrated by the author.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, I wanted to get right to it.
I know this is scintillating.
No, I want to get, I took us off topic. Here we go. This is, of course, the theme from Cops. And I don't know about anyone else, but I did not have Scottie Scheffler arrested on my PGA Championship bingo card.
Oh, man.
I'll quickly tell you, I went to a place called Otter Creek on Friday morning for a practice round for a qualifier I have this week. And went with our buddy Brooke Benny. I took Brooke with me, and it rained all day. Like not even four hours, the two of us. So 3.5 hours of
a drag.
But what was cool was I got in my car around, it's 1:45 or so from where I live. And I get in my car, and once I adjust everything, and I put in the destination, I turn the radio on to PGA Tour radio on satellite. And I hear the words, Scottie Scheffler arrested. And I was like, what? I did. I was like, what? That exactly. Can't be right. And then I started listening for the next 1:45 for these guys on the Golf Channel and the PGA Tour. It was like the Kennedy assassination.
Exactly. Exactly. It was like Walter. He's taken 3 paces. The video, if you slow it, I mean.
Yeah, it was just, like they were like analyzing his arrest like this Zapruder film. It was, it was something else. I know what I think. What do you think? What did you think of it all?
Oh, of course, it's all speculation, but like what happened? I think it was just, it was darkish, pylons. Like I've read a lot of stuff on it, like a lot of people, and they said that the whole traffic organization is not very good. People don't really know where they're supposed to go. So I think just in some confusion, Scheffler went someplace where maybe he wasn't supposed to go. And I think that we kind of had an overzealous cop here.
Well, I don't know about that second part. The part before that, he was told by the, so from my understanding is he was told by one policeman yeah. to go. And they were all the players were in this, were going around the traffic jam. So one cop told him to proceed. And so he was proceeding, thinking he'd gotten permission. Plus, he's driving a courtesy car with the flashers on. He's got a lanyard that says PGA Championship. And I'm not 100% sure on this, but those cars might have said courtesy car. The second cop, I believe you're right, that like he just, let's just be honest. These are not the best and brightest people doing their jobs. You know, they're just not.
I know.
They're not. This is Louisville. Defense. We're not talking about Canadians. This is Louisville, Kentucky. This is America. You know, what part of this guy would have thought that Scottie Scheffler was making a run for the border? Like, seriously. Like, what did he think a guy with a courtesy car and a lanyard was doing? And so the cop jumps on his car, gets dragged for a few feet, rips his pants. Like, he actually put that in his report. See, to me, and I could be cynical, but I think others might could share be. This. But no, but I'm saying in this particular case, others might share this, that cop, you know, said he was hurt. Like, you know, there's going to be a lawsuit. He's going to try and sue Scottie Scheffler. Because, why wouldn't he? He's a multimillionaire. Because when Scottie Scheffler gets out of that car, that should have been...
Now you are sounding cynical.
No, I don't think so. It's America. It's not like they don't sue for way less things than this.
I know. So you think baseball is a national sport? It's litigation.
Exactly. And the second that Scottie Scheffler gets out of that car, that should have been the end of it.
Yeah. If cooler heads had prevailed...
As soon as they recognize, forget that it's the number one player in the world. That would be like Patrick Mahomes getting arrested on the way to the Super Bowl. Like it was
in a golf context, but no one, you know, like what I was really pleased about is that Scottie Scheffler didn't pull any of this. Do you know who I am?
Bullshit? Yeah. Well, yeah, 100%.
Because no one knows who he is. Like, because we're golf nerds. I mean, we know who all these guys are, but the average person has zero idea who the hell Scottie Scheffler is.
I agree. But he knew he was a player because he had player identification. And to Scottie's, listen, there, any other player, there's lots of players that would have flipped their shit.
Oh, my God.
And they never...
Imagine Phil.
They would have lost their minds.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you a bunch of things I thought this week. It looks really bad on the Louisville, Kentucky area.
Oh, can you imagine the mayor, as soon as he hears about this, he's slapping his forehead going, oh, my God.
Well, let's fast forward to after the incarceration of an hour and 12 minutes or whatever it was. Do you know that one of the people that picked him up from jail, along with his manager and somebody else, you know, one of the people that drove him back to the golf course was the guy that
owner of Valhalla.
Yeah. Let me just say this again, not being cynical, but being real. There's a bunch of old white guys. Talking to each other this weekend saying, what the fuck are we doing here? This is one of the biggest events that ever comes to that area. 100 million plus in revenue. And if they don't clear this up Tuesday, it ain't never coming back. So I guarantee you the mayor and the good old boys and the owner of Valhalla are going to get to that prosecutor and say, okay, let's be reasonable here. This is going to look, if we take this to court, this is going to look ridiculous on us. That's what.
Yeah. What about that? But does that preclude the civil suit by the aggrieved Detective Gillis?
I think somebody's going to talk to him and say, you know, detective, this is not the best, or detective, whatever, constable. This is not the best.
No, he's a detective, apparently.
No, is he? Then why was he doing? Traffic duty?
I know. Maybe they get promoted pretty quickly in Louisville.
Anyway, I think the whole thing looks terrible on that community. And the last thing I would say is it was and again, this isn't being cynical. This is just being, you know, a human being alive in 2024. It's a good thing it wasn't Tony Finau.
Ooh, we'll just let that settle.
But think about it. Tony Finau, yeah. Sahith Thegala, you know, just a good thing it wasn't him. because it could be. Oh, not because I'm, you know, there's, because 99 times out of 100, nothing would happen. But that one time is a possibility where it could get, where it could have gotten extremely ugly.
No, you'd be a fool not to see that that's a possibility in America.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, I feel bad for our American listeners. It feels like we're beating up on them, but it just keeps coming back in waves, these things. Although it's kind of been quiet on the mass shooting and, you know, people getting beat up front for a little while. I don't know.
There's a mass shooting every day in that country.
Yeah, I get
Was this weekend. If you go and they quantify a mass shooting is more than three or four people. That happens every day. And again, I don't think we're beating up on them. Their ex-president was on trial for paying off a porn star for the last couple of weeks. You know, they get what they deserve. It's not like, what is this new? Anyway, back to the golf. How about, could there be a better round of golf in this calendar year? Forget the 62s and the almost 61s that were shot.
Yeah.
Then a guy stretching in jail in an orange jumpsuit an hour later. I was driving to this little practice round thinking, I don't know, maybe he'll just quit.
Yeah.
But he comes back and shoots 66.
Exactly. Is that?
Who does that after going to jail?
I know. I love that. I think the one little reference they made to it, that Amanda made in the post round chat with Scheffler, was, I think you stretched in jail.
Yeah.
That was as far as she was going to go with that. Pretty interesting to realize. Take Saturday's round, which I think most people hit, he hit the wall.
Yeah, for sure.
You take that out. He had a 66, a 65, and a 67. Throw in another 66, he's at 20 under par. He's right there.
Yeah, and Saturday's round is the first time since last August he shot over par.
Yeah, last August.
Yeah. My goodness. Like, he shot over par for the first time in I don't know how many rounds.
Yeah, it kept him two from matching Tiger for, I think, under par rounds or something like that.
And I was thinking about that yesterday, too, watching it on Sunday, thinking that guy, whoever he was, the cop that caused all this, really, you know, really cost Scheffler a chance to win the tournament. Because whatever he felt on Friday shooting that 66, it caught up to him Saturday. Because... Absolutely. It just did. It's not. It was out of character the way he played.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bogey, double bogey start. It was so weird. You just know the adrenaline had gone away and his body was just fatigued. He didn't even feel, he said after his round yesterday, he didn't even feel, you know, right just yet. But so that incident really cost that kid a chance to win that tournament.
Absolutely did. Yeah.
So that's all. I mean, and again, the Americans, you know, I mean, they do it. They covered it from wall to wall, and everyone was going out of their way, appropriately, I would say, to acknowledge that somebody had lost their life. That's what caused all this.
Yeah.
And since I'm apparently on the cynicism trail, I thought, it's great that they're acknowledging that there was a loss of life by a traffic accident. It's just too bad they don't get that worked up when there is a, you know, a bunch of people being shot up in a Denny's. So anyway, I'll leave it alone for now.
Yeah. The only light bit, some of the memes that came up from that.
Oh yeah,
like all day.
Oh, I know.
I'm sending at the bottom of every email I sent hashtag free Scotty.
Oh yeah,
I just couldn't help myself.
My buddy Graham McDougal sent me one. It's a picture of Johnny Cochran, and he's Johnny Cochran's looking up, and he said, "If he's next on the tee, he must be set free." That's just crazy. Yeah,
some of the stuff that came out, it was just hysterical.
Oh yeah,
you know, Cathal Kelly's column in the Globe and Mail, that was a genuine laugh out loud moment for me. Oh my God, he just nailed the absurdity of it, just insane.
But as I said at the beginning, like the last thing anyone would have thought they'd be talking about on Friday was Scottie Scheffler arrested. But then it was back to business, and you know, I watched a lot of the tournament. And, you know, I have a couple thoughts from it. I would say that I find it still hard as an entertaining a character and entertaining a golfer as Bryson DeChambeau is. I still find it hard to want him to do well because the live golf stink. And I'm just being honest. Like, I just found myself yesterday, you know, cheering against him. Even though he's amazing and he's entertaining, I just wish he still played on the PGA Tour. And part of the reason I was cheering against him is because on golf Twitter, those guys, the Live Golf Nation, Live Golf Trackers, are so absurd with their, you know, fealty to this new tour. That, I mean, again, I just wish that Bryson DeChambeau still played on the PGA Tour. But there's no denying that he is an amazing golfer.
Yeah, absolutely. I was working hard not to project all my nonsense on him. I have a hard time. I had a hard time for years with Mickelson. I still do.
Yeah,
me too. Now he's Lord Voldemort. But I remember when he won the Open Championship, I kind of went, let me give him a little bit of leeway. But what I noticed about DeChambeau was it seemed that in the final round, there's less of the, aw, come on. There's less of that kind of, I don't know, what got brat stuff. He seemed to be taking things in stride a little bit more. But also, he was playing lights out, except for that drive on 16 in which the golf gods leaned out and went, no, this isn't going into oblivion. We'll get this back into the fairway.
You know, I'm with you, by the way. I still hate Mickelson. I think I hate him more.
I hate him even more now.
Yeah, I think I hate him more now. I think let me check my Mickelson hate meter. Yeah, it's definitely more. I've watched some of Bryson's online content, and I think it's charming. Yeah, I'm going to say it. I think it's very well done. He's got this series where he has people come on with him trying to break
54 or 52. Or
whatever it is, it's to shoot really low, and they play a scramble. And he had Paige Spiranak on it. He had Grant Horvat, this other YouTube guy. So I like it. And again, I've come around. He definitely has a different vibe to him now than when he was like all blown up and, you know, sort of overroided. He's just
A little less petulant.
My only thing about is when they say, oh, here's Bryson. He's 206 yards hitting an 8-iron. No, he's not. It's not hitting an 8-iron. It's got a 6-iron loft. Just stop calling it an 8-iron. I mean, because at one point they said, yeah, he's got his 8-iron. It's 26 degrees. And I went and looked up what a 26-degree golf club is, and it's a 5-iron or a 6-iron.
Wow.
So he's got his lofts. I don't know why, but he's got these, you know, he's the scientist. By the way, I do appreciate that they've stopped calling him that because because they know how these announcers have they have this theme of everybody's got this thing. Well, him, it was so much. He's a professor. He's an artist or a scientist. I'm like, shut up. But he is something else. Like that drive aside, he had a couple in the air that were 192, 196 mile an hour ball speed. Like that's
crazy. But also, just you can't take it away. The guy hits. Like Tiger Woods in his prime, hit some shots no one else can hit. I mean, it's just amazing. That 7-iron, you know, it's back to 16 when he got super lucky there. That was either a 7 or an 8. I've read a couple different accounts. Again, it doesn't really matter. But that thing was just lasered on the flag all the way. And in that moment, especially, you know, third last hole, major, you're contending. Man, he hit the shot, you know, so.
You can't take anything away from the fact that he tied the all-time major scoring record in any other major but this one. He would have won. And I know he was disappointed, and rightly so, because he played amazing.
Well, yeah, you make a birdie on the last hole of a major. I mean, you're right there, man. Holy cow.
So we'll get. Let's leave Xander. Do you know that Xander, the name Xander, comes from Alexander? Did you know that?
Well, I could kind of see it because there's an X that starts it.
But most people don't know that. But it's like, I was trying to explain this to Fred. He's like, because he didn't know, that he's like Xanadu or whatever. No, I said, it's short for Alex Xander. So it's the last part. Anyway, we'll leave him.
See, that's why this show is required.
Exactly.
Listening. You pick up really important stuff for your life.
So let's leave him for a second. I'll tell you who really surprised me is Colin Morikawa.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all I have.
Yeah. He was. No.
Yeah.
I sent you a text. I remember after one, it was after you missed yet another putt.
Yeah, I missed a lot of putts.
It was like, fuck me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's basically looked up in the sky and mouthed, fuck me. And you sent that to me. You said, holy lip reading, Batman. And I just responded with the thumbs up or something.
Yeah. You know what? It reminded me a little bit of Rory in some recent majors. It's almost like the can't get the head cover off the putter.
Yeah.
There's just something that's going on there that's just not, I don't know, it's releasing it or something. But it was like every putt Morikawa had that day, you went, no, that's going to miss right.
And I think for those guys, maybe even more than amateurs, because, the allure of this game is that we can all relate in some way, manner, or fashion. But with professional golfers, I think early on in pressure rounds, like the last round of a major, it looks to me that when they miss early, it's hard to, they really do thrive on the momentum. Because very often you'll see somebody make a significant putt in the first couple of holes, and that propels them. It gives them some energy. But it was the continually, whether he's missing on the right or not, which I think you were right, it was just the continual missing that adds up. Because when he went, and he was in position to make some birdies on those par fives.
Absolutely he was. I mean, it was a Colin Morikawa kind of round we come to expect. I mean, he's got that nice slow takeaway, and then pow, the tracer shows that this thing's just cutting into the fairway, and then he's hitting green after green after green. You know, it's just a Colin Morikawa round. But there it is, two majors in a row in which he was right there.
In the last group.
And not able to get it done. But again, it's all, you know, learning and they'll jump back from it. I mean, the thing that I think is interesting about these players at this level is that they're able to withstand the ups and downs. I think amateur golfers, what we could learn from that is, you're going to have a bad round. You're going to be disappointed you didn't win a major championship and gazillion dollars and everything that goes with it. But they don't live and die with it. It stings. They don't like losing. But what they're able to do is to surmount it by just not going down into that deep, deep valley where they start to question their mechanics and everything in a huge way. They tend to rebound. It's kind of like a faster rebound.
I think you're right. Not, you know, most of the time. I mean, there are examples of people that have.
There's many times I'm wrong.
No, you're not completely wrong. Lots of professional golfers have kind of spiraled into the abyss. What I think is fascinating is on the other side of it. You know, 7 days ago, you know, according to the broadcasters, you know, Victor Hovland was thinking of.
Withdrawing.
Thank you. I was going to say declining the invitation. he was thinking of declining the invitation to the.
You are invited to the 100th play.
I decline. He was thinking of withdrawing from the tournament, and then worked a little bit with his old coach, and then 7 days later, is a birdie away from being.
Yeah,
a birdie or two away from winning the event, and that's what's so intriguing about golf. I think at every level,
yeah, absolutely. Well, also Shane Lowry,
yeah.
Shane Lowry has not been playing very well. The putter has been cold. I think he spent something like 90 minutes with Luke Donald you know, who was renowned for his putting, former, he's a European Ryder Cup captain, spent 90 minutes with him, didn't do a speck of work on his mechanics. It was all about routine, just seeing the shot and letting it go. And so, it's, you know, to your point, yeah, they'll seek some help sometimes. And you can see how it can show up. I remember probably one of the best examples of that was, I forget, it was in the 90s when Ben Crenshaw won the Masters after Harvey Pinnock, his instructor, died. And it was somewhere during the week of the Masters that I think it was his caddy.
Yeah, it was his caddy.
Said the ball had crept up in his stance or something and just played it back a bit.
Yeah.
And from there, pow, it just unlocked it.
Well, and that's what I mean. And, you know, thanks for reminding me about Shane Lowry. Like, that's what's exciting about the game is that on Saturday, you had a chance to watch history. And it was interesting after that Shane Lowry knew exactly what that putt meant. And everyone misread it. At least he got it to the hole. I know I'm being facetious, but I mean, he didn't. It was a pretty good putt. It just misread it like a lot of people from that position. But that was pretty cool. You know, it's never happened in history. You know, it used to be like the 4-minute mile. No one had ever shot under 63. Then Brandon Grace did it a few years ago. It shot 62. And here was a chance to watch somebody to shoot 61. And, you know, Valhalla is not, I think the golf course, because of how soft it was.
Yeah, super gettable.
Super gettable. But still, you got to, you know, he made a lot of birdies. He made more birdies in that round than most of us, you know, a lot of our listeners won't make all year. I mean, like, seriously.
I think most in their lifetime.
9 birdies. Oh, I'm not talking about in one round. I'm talking about the whole season.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of birdies is what it is.
Yeah.
But he also faded a little bit on Sunday. But nobody faded worse than Morikawa. And you know, like, I felt bad for him because there you are watching somebody doing what you would thought you would have done. Like, what would it be? What would be an average round there for Colin Morikawa? It would be a 3-under to start with. Yep. You know, there's a couple easy par 5s, easy par 4. And the way he hits the ball, he doesn't make a lot of bogeys. He only made one bogey yesterday. Made one bogey, one birdie. But to watch somebody else in full flight, and the guy you played with the day before, you know, that has to hurt a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, Morikawa, I mean, that speaks to the level of player he is. That there he is again. He's got 2 majors already under his belt. I don't know how old he is. He's 23 or something like that. My goodness.
Yeah, and so what are your thoughts about Xanadu Shafalas? Xanadu Shafalasigis.
Well, I think he's a pillar of resiliency.
Yeah.
I mean, you can imagine the guy's got, he had 7 PGA Tour wins. I mean, you know, captain contention, you know, always seems to be there, Xander Schauffele. But he never seemed to get the job done in majors. So things started to happen to him. He made that bogey, or I think that was early in the back. And then he started to get some, you know, down the stretch, he started to get this weird shit happening to him. Like that drive, I think it was on 16. It carries that left bunker by about a foot, but it jumps back in the bunker.
I know.
And then to get that, I think he pulled both tee shots, 16, 18. I think he pulled it a bit.
But to your point, like he got, like whereas Bryson DeChambeau's break on 16 was bananas.
Yeah.
Like that should have been bogey, par at the best, but bogey probably. Xanadu got on 18. Like that was just, because that wasn't a bad drive. It just, you know, it was 1 yard away from being, you know, easy to get near the green.
Absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, so I think in terms of him being able to just keep the noise down in his head was amazing. And then, of course, you know, he gets the funky lie. You know, it was more about stance, you know, feet in the bunker on 18, the ball's above his feet, all of that. It would have been so easy for his mind to go, oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
You know, golf gods are against me or some damn thing. But he just stayed resilient. And I love the line he used. I stayed in my lane. And I couldn't also help but think, that seemed to be an inference of what Scotty should have done.
Oh, that's funny. That's very good. I've liked him for a long time. I've always thought he's got a... Hang on, my dogs are barking here. No, I'm not talking about my feet. I've got two dogs in the house. My daughter's dog is a Chihuahua, and every time it sees something, anything, it just starts barking. And then my dog Stan, out of dog solidarity, also starts barking.
Dog it's solidarity, just, yeah, I know it. Yeah.
It's just funny. I've always liked his game. He's super strong. He's got like. You know, if you could copy somebody's golf swing, that would be one of them. He's just so solid. Mm-hmm. You know, he's gotten a little more fidgety. Like, I've never really noticed he did that grippy thing that he's been doing. But, you know, maybe that comes with age. I don't know.
I know that Finchie and Dottie Pepper were all over him for taking a long time over chip shots.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard that. But he certainly, I mean, I wanted him to win, again, partly because I didn't want Bryson DeChambeau to win. I just didn't. But also because, you know, last week he was in contention. He's been basically leading a golf tournament for two weekends in a row.
Yeah.
And as you said, captain contention, that's a great way of describing him. And also, he's one of those guys that deserves to be, you know, he's won the gold medal. He's been on the Ryder Cup. He deserves to be a major championship winner because... You know, he's just that good. The sad thing about golf, or the weird thing about golf, is you could be that good your entire career and not win one.
Well,
Colin Montgomery, exactly. Seven-time European Order of Merit winner. Never won a major. Greg Norman. One of the best. He was the number one in the world for 300-plus weeks in his career. Never won more than two majors. Should have won probably 10.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So it's not predetermined or preordained is the word. It's not preordained that you get to win them. Yeah. Like, I don't think it's like Rory McIlroy to me could easily never win another major. You don't have to. Right. 35, man. That's pretty late in the game. I know they mentioned a few guys yesterday, Tom Kite, Mark O'Meara. Phil, famously later in their careers, but I don't know, man. You don't have to win them. And I was happy he did.
The best I ever heard in terms of the way you have to approach golf, particularly in big events and majors, was Payne Stewart. And he says, you just keep knocking on the door.
Yeah.
And one day it'll eventually open. And I think that's what happened for Xander. You know, when you're that much in contention, it's just eventually, if you can keep your wits about you and just keep going and going, the brakes will, it'll finally kind of go your way. But back to my earlier point, the thing about golf, it's so hard. You know, we all know that there's so much time between shots. There's all this time to damn well think. To get caught in some kind of story, oh, here we go. I guess this is not supposed to happen for me or mm-hmm. something. And that, to me, is the discipline, the skill to keep your mind going. And it's not unusual. It's not unusual, I think, for anybody. I don't care what level you're at, for your mind to go, oh, really? Another good break. Wow. But then just to go, okay, what do we have to do here? What's the task at hand? And just stay with it and focus and just try and do your best.
Yeah, very well said. And what I'm trying to do here, oh yeah, here it is. I've got it. Before the end of the show, we're going to talk a little bit more about the
season of balance.
No. Oh, I've got a great I've got a great season of balance story for you. I'm going to tell you a story that it's bananas. This story I'm going to tell you. No, I want to. Because the book. The seven
meals you can make during Thanksgiving.
Seven on the run meals for golf aficionados. I want to read before we're done a little excerpt, if I may, from something that our friend, a friend of show, Carl Morris, said about Tim O'Connor. Okay. Aww. So just get ready for it, okay? It's going to be embarrassing, and I don't care. But now, with your, again, what Tim's done, he's written this book, and I tell you, the book is fantastic. It's the foreword's a bit weak, but the book's fantastic. The foreword could use some punch-ups. Foreword by Golf Spiritual Leader. And what I guess you do when you're an author is you send it out to friends and hopefully they'll write something for the, like a review or the jacket or like one of the, like a blurb. Is it a blurb?
Amazon thingy.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to read you what, I'm going to read everybody what Carl said. So when we recorded our last show with Charles Fitzsimmons, when we spoke extensively about Charles winning some, Sarsaparilla big championship.
Chattanooga
Sarsaparilla, whatever the fuck that was. He talks about it like, then he has the audacity to say, "Ooh, more about your shit." Shut up, Charles. Anyway, so at the beginning of this week, so we're recording on Monday, May 20th. 1 week ago, I played round one of this 2-day tournament that Guru Kent Osborne and I played together and won.
Yeah.
And for about 2 weeks prior to last Monday and Tuesday, I have just been on a golf cruise control of hitting the golf ball. Like, it's been as bad as I was, say, a month ago, it's as good as I have been. It's as good as I can play. Maybe not as good as I can score. You know, I didn't have really any really super low rounds except for the round on Tuesday, which I probably shot even par. But I've been hitting it so good, so reliably, so not even thinking about it. Then Wednesday, I had a qualifier for our Senior Ryder Cup team and didn't play great, but I kind of scraped it around and shot 77. Wait for it. Friday, I played a practice round, didn't keep score. Season of balance, I kind of got knocked off this week because I had a tournament Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Thursday, I couldn't do yoga because I had a gig to go and host for a company. Friday, I played a practice round, but I did my stretching and I did all my daily stuff. Saturday, I played golf in our little Saturday morning match. So that's only 2 days ago. So I tried on every shot. So two things happened. I lost more balls on Saturday than I've lost in a round of golf since, I don't know, I was 12. And I shot the highest score I've recorded, like trying to keep score, the highest score I've recorded in since 2016. I lost 6 golf balls in that round, maybe 5 or 6. I lost track. And I shot 91.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
Was this a
91.
Was this a golf course that was like framed by trees in which you keep your driver in the bag or anything like that? Or?
It was from the, check this out, the silver tees at my home golf course. The same tees that last fall I shot a bogey-free 5-under par 67. Yeah, little humble brag there. I shot 91, 45, 46, 45. On the front nine, I double bogeyed every other hole. I made 4 pars and 5 double bogeys. And, as I was saying to my buddy Grant yesterday, we were talking, and he said, how did you feel? I said, well, I'm going to tell you right now. I had three or four belly laughs during the round with the people I was playing with because it was so, not even about how I was playing, because they're all guys that know I can play. Just things that were said that day that made me laugh. So that was kind of the vibe I was given off. And even though, yeah, it was a bit embarrassing, maybe, I don't even know if the word's embarrassing. Bewildering is the word.
Yeah, I would get that.
It was bewildering to me that I couldn't get the golf ball and the club to make friends. I just couldn't. But what I did, and I said this to Grant, what I did practice that day is I practiced, and I want you to know this, Tim, you've known me a long time, I didn't slam one club. I specifically did not raise my voice, didn't say fuck, didn't get pissed, not one time in 91 shots, because that was what I was going to practice on Saturday.
Yeah.
I thought, if there's nothing else today, I want to see if I can get around this chaos that is happening to me without raising my voice. And the other guys I was playing with, they were just like having a normal round. They all shot in the high 70s, low 80s, got pissed off when they'd hit a bad shot. But I thought, nope, I don't know what I'm going to shoot today. I didn't think I was going to shoot in the 90s. Because I still, every hole I thought, oh, well, at some point I'm going to turn this around. Nope. No, you're not. I had to par the last hole for 91. But I bring it up to illustrate a couple things. Not just how great I am and not getting mad. Just how quickly it turns around. Like 7 days ago, I played a round of golf with Kent that was, I can't remember hitting it better this year for sure. Like I hit it solid that day. I made 4 or 5 birdies on my own ball. I shot even par. And then 6 days later, I make, I don't know, 5 or 6 pars for the whole round and shoot 91. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. And it's the freaking game. I mean, earlier we're talking about Victor Hovland. He's going to decline, withdraw. You know, not play because this whole year, his years had been a disaster. And then there he is, as you say, a birdie away from, you know, possibly winning a major championship. Shane Lowry not being able to get it in. You know, and the Colin Morikawa, I would say that the equivalent for him, all, you know, all his colleagues are shooting 66, 67. He shoots, was it even par?
Yeah, it's finally it's like for him, the last hole.
That's kind of like high 80s for Colin Morikawa.
Yeah.
But it's just the game, man. It's just, you got, it's, I think Fred Shoemaker said it's the game with no top. It's a mount with no top. You don't master it. You rent it for a little while, but it just comes and it goes. And the thing, the key piece is that it doesn't diminish who you are as a golfer. It doesn't mean you have to reinvent your swing, and it doesn't devalue, you know, your own sense of yourself. You're okay. Yeah. And I think that's the key thing. And I'm just really so proud that your car didn't get beat up.
Oh yeah,
drag a 5-iron on the pavement.
Yeah, you knew Swing Thoughts listeners. Go back and listen to a couple episodes where I punched the inside of my windshield and broke it. That's how fucking wild this is. I literally punched the inside after a round of golf. I think a club championship round where I shot 80. I punched the inside of my windshield the other day. A guy that I hadn't played a lot with recently, but I had played with lots over time at Glencairn, said out loud to me as we were coming down 18, he said, man, what a good sport you were today. He actually said that out loud to me, and I was like, thank you, Tom. He said, what a good sport. And I thought, that what an interesting way to put it. I parred the last hole to shoot 91. The reason I say it again is because we've all done it. I've done it a lot. But everyone listening has had those days where you know you're just gagging it. You're just saying, it's a petulant thing. I used to do it all the time, so I had no shame where I would be. Here's how I would illustrate to the group that I'm way better than I'm playing today is I'd stop trying. Watch me golf, I'd fuck you and I wouldn't line up putts. I lined up every shot. I went through my pre-shot routine on every one of those 91 shots and I still couldn't get the ball in the hole. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, but that's the game. It just is. And it's that ability to go out. But you also, you know, I wouldn't be surprised that you send me a text in a couple of days and it's like, oh, I shot 74 today. I mean, it's just the game.
Yeah, I know.
But that's part of it, being able to keep your head. You know, a game will come back to Xanadu.
Xanadu Shuffleupagus.
Xanadu, yeah.
Xanadu Shuffleupagus.
Yeah. Was that also a Rush song? Never mind. The keeping his head. Just, okay, guess it's not meant to be today, or maybe it is possible today. And just being okay with it. I love the idea. I don't know who said it. It was some very smart person who came out on our show who said, can you stand over a golf ball and go like, I can accept wherever the hell this goes. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter where it goes. I'm okay with it, which says I'm okay with me. And I think that's a key thing.
Now, I will mention that we were the last group that day. Yeah, and there's like there's an hour and a half of tee times in my Saturday morning group. It's a big group of guys, 40 most days. There's a wait list. Sometimes it's closer to 50. Wow. And I was in the last group, and I did not go in and hang around after for a couple of reasons. I had expended all the energy I had to not punch myself in the face. And I had no more energy left for social discourse. That's number one. And number two is there's a place around the Queensway where I live in Toronto. It's called Rudy Burger. and it is just like one of the great burger places. And I said to my buddy Tom, I said, when he said, "Hey, you're a good sport," and I said, "Yeah, but I'm on my way home. I said on my way home, I'm stopping for a Soro burger at Rudy's." That's what I had, and I had a giant double cheeseburger with bacon and French fries and gravy to make myself feel better, and it worked. It worked.
When you got home, did you launch yourself on your bed and went, "Oh my God, what did I just?"
No, I ate my inhale. Rudy. I ate my Rudy burger, and I watched the PGA Championship, and then I fell asleep like a little baby. All right. So the book, as you know, is called Lots of Great Things. It's called
7 Meals to Make Christmas
Getting
Easier.
Unstuck: 7 Transformational Practices for Golf
Nerds.
For golf nerds. Well, where's the nerds in that? Okay. Well, I'm looking at. See, on the pages here. Yeah, golf nerds. So, Carl Morris was sent a copy. And here's what Carl had to say. There's some preamble stuff. But the best thing is what he says about Tim's book. "What you're about to read in these pages is an authentic journey of discovery, which can help you learn about you, to peel back the layers and reveal what you could truly be capable of. The wisdom contained here can be profoundly beneficial to your relationships with golf, but perhaps most importantly, excuse me, it shines a hopeful light towards a more gratifying and purposeful relationship to life in general." How about that sentence? It shines a hopeful light. This is your book. Come on. "It shines a hopeful light towards a more gratifying and purposeful relationship to life in general. Explore what could be possible and allow Tim to be your guide. You are in very safe hands." And if that doesn't make you cry, my friends, God damn it. Can you imagine? Is it? I just want somebody to love me like Carl Morris loves your book. No, all jokes aside, it was very well deserved. Very well deserved.
Thanks very much. Yeah. It was interesting. Came home Saturday night after being at a wedding. Yeah, I had a few pops. It was fun.
You're drunk.
I read his email 3 times. I went, "Oh my gosh, that is amazing." So yeah, I'm super, you know, humbled, honored that he would write such a thing. And but I can't deny it's super encouraging, you know, to have worked on this damn book for so long and to finally let it go to the point I can send it out to people. And it seemed I've been reviewing parts of it, seems to stand up, so I feel good.
When I feel like we ask you this at the end of every show, so now that it's actually out in the world, when does it get put together and is available for people to download or to buy?
I'm hoping that it's a matter of about a month, because I have to work. I'm working with a designer who's working on it to format it, get the cover done, and you know, all this stuff. Because there's a bunch of moving parts. Because now I'm going to take things like what Carl's provided and they'll help put those review thingies on the back cover.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping it kind of depends. She's a very busy lady. She's I'm hoping that it will, because Kent's book actually is in front of mine in terms of the work she has to do.
Yeah.
So
I want to just acknowledge quickly that I was going to spend more time on it, but we're almost out of time. Our very good friend of show, Richard Zokel, has been recently inducted into the BC Sports Hall of Fame.
That's awesome.
Winner of he competed, just check this out. He played in 412 tour events, won the 92 GMO, the Greater Milwaukee Open, along with some Corn Ferry events, also the CPGA. And played a key role in developing some golf courses in BC. Of course, is the founder of Mindtrack Golf, and just an all around great guy. Very interesting character, and getting to know him here on this show and sort of personally the last couple of years has been an amazing experience for me and you, I'm sure. So congratulations to official friend of show, Zokel. And I sent him a note and told him we'd get him back on the program to help celebrate his great honor sometime in the next little while, okay?
Yeah, no, he's a character and a half, and just passion that guy has for the game and for helping people. Super guy, and yeah, congrats to getting in the BC Hall of Fame.
That's well, amazing. and you in the Ontario Golf Hall of Fame, the two of you guys can have like a Hall of Fame conversation. You're like, oh, what's your, what does your Hall of Fame trophy look like? Is it bigger than mine? And what about you, Howard? No, I got nothing. All right, thanks to TaylorMade Golf, Oscar Bravo, who is OscarBravo.com, and SecretLinks.golf. And thanks to you, Tim O'Connor. Good luck, everybody. See you next week.
Thanks, Ben.